The zombies exclaimed in revulsion.
"Stop that!"
the automator commanded. But she could not stop, and the hall filled instantly with the acrid miasma of stomach acid and alcohol and too sweet fruit punch. Along the line, mouths bulged, chests lurched.
"All right, maybe we should get some fresh air,"
the automator said hurriedly.
"Howard, open the..."
But it was too late. First at intervals, then in seconds, en masse, with a noise like nothing Howard had ever heard before, what seemed like all 200 teenagers were throwing up, pale, half-naked bodies in various attitudes of expulsion, a vast and hellish deluge washing over the floor.
"So much vomit,"
the automator recollects now, from the safety of his office.
"Yeah,"
Howard says miserably. He was the one who mopped most of it up. 2 hours with an aching back, the automator grim and unspeaking at the other end of the hall, a solitary black balloon the only other company. Miss McIntyre having gone home ashen-faced and wordless shortly after they'd discharged the kids, leaving him, as the clock tower told one, to climb into his car alone and drive in complicated elaborations of circles through the darkened suburbs for another hour, till he could be absolutely sure that Hallie would be gone to bed, and then sit in the kitchen, reeking of disinfectant in front of an undrunk glass of water, as the panelled surroundings, at once familiar and secretly changed, sparkled at him complicitly. He lowered his head like he didn't know what they meant.
"I don't know what happened, Greg,"
he says as sincerely as he can.
"They just suddenly seem to transform. I can't explain it. I don't even know if there is an explanation."
"There's always an explanation, Howard. In this case, the explanation is that the punch was spiked."
"Spiked?"
"Punch had turned blue, meaning probably sleeping pills of some kind. Your standard date rape setup."
The automator examines his nails thoughtfully.
"The results aren't back from the lab yet, but from the symptoms, loss of inhibitions and motor control, followed by acute nausea, my guess is a large quantity of benzodiazepine."
"Back from the..."
"Couple of old boys working on the force, Howard. Simon Stevens, class of 85, Tom Smith, class of 91. You might remember Smithy, a couple of years ahead of you. Decent prop forward, lot of potential, but never quite made the cut. Got them on the case this morning. Had to. All it takes is for one parent to figure out what happened in there, and it'll be raining lawsuits. And when it does, we'd better be ready."
He turns on his heel and circumnavigates the room, tapping thoughtfully at his lower lip.
"I've spoken to the boy in charge of the punch bowl, but I don't think he has anything to do with it. Most likely someone distracted him while his partner slipped the Mickey into the vat. What with the disco lights, the colour change wouldn't have been noticed. Though, frankly, some of these kids, first whiff they got the punch wasn't kosher, they'd be queuing round the block for it. That doesn't explain how, with two supervisors in the room, the situation escalated to the level it did."
He wheels round, his gimlet eyes and Trudy's doe-like ones fix on Howard.
"How was that possible, Howard?"
"It just seemed to happen,"
Howard says in a strangulated voice. The automator waits without responding, and then says,
"When Wallace Willis called me, he said that you and Miss McIntyre did not appear to be in the hall."
"Oh, yes. That is..."
Howard stutters, and then, as though it has just occurred to him,
"Well, Miss McIntyre and I did both briefly leave the hall at one point."
"You did?"
"Yes, we did. Briefly."
"Uh-huh."
The automator scratches his ear and then roars.
"God damn it, Howard! What the hell were you thinking? Rule one of education, never leave the kids unattended for a second. Not for a second! I specifically told you, someone in the room at all times. Damn it, there's your lawsuit right there. Flagrant neglect of duty. Flagrant!"
The vein is back, hammering a tattoo into his temple.
"I know.
Howard Wheedles.
But what happened was, you see, orally, Miss McIntyre discovered a large quantity of alcohol in the toilets, too much for her to carry, and we wanted to store it out of harm's way. So we briefly went to the geography room, because that seemed like the safest place.
And how long were you briefly gone for, would you say?
The automator's gaze bores into Howard. Howard uplifts his eyes to the ceiling, as if for inspiration. He squeezes them tight shut, then half opens just one.
10 minutes?
The stare has not gone away.
10 minutes?
Cold sweat breaks out under his collar.
Roughly that, I would say, yes.
The steely eyes narrow, and then are averted.
Yes, that's pretty much what Orly said. Trudy?
Trudy leafs through a manila folder.
That's what I have here. Confiscated alcohol from girls' toilet, left to store in geography room, gone 10 to 12 minutes.
Although it sounds like you and Orly have overestimated slightly, because Trudy and I timed it, and it takes just under 4 minutes for a person walking at average speed to get from the hall to the geography room, and 4 minutes back is 8 minutes.
The automator comments. This information, however, and the good fortune of Miss McIntyre's lie corroborating his, are drowned out by the mention of her name.
She was here? Orally? I mean, Miss McIntyre.
First thing this morning.
The automator wags his head solemnly.
Whole thing has shaken her up pretty badly. She's an investment banker. She's not used to that kind of unbridled depravity.
Howard descends into a momentary reverie of orally unbridled, bare, on the other side of those 12 tumultuous hours, and wonders, at the same moment that his stomach churns with guilt, just how he can recross them, get back to her.
Let's call it 10 minutes.
The automator resumes.
Whatever our doper used, it must have packed a heck of a wallop for the effects to take hold that quickly. A heck of a wallop.
He rounds on Howard, who looks back with a gesture of helpless imbecility.
Well, the boys in the lab will be able to clear that up for us. The bigger question is, who's responsible?
He picks up a paperweight from his desk, roughly the size of a hockey puck, and vaguely weapon-like.
I think we both know the answer to that one. This has Juster's fingerprints all over it.
Juster?
Howard wakes abruptly from his orally reverie.
You mean Daniel Juster?
You're darn right I mean him, Slippy or Snippy or whatever he wants to call himself.
But what? I mean, what does he have to do with it?
Well, damn it, Howard, do I have to draw you a picture? Just look at the facts. 1 week ago, we have this kid, in contravention of all classroom protocol, throwing up in his French lesson. Next thing we know, an ordinary school hop turns into a mass vomiting spree. The connection's unavoidable.
Perhaps it is, but Howard's brain is struggling to make it.
I really don't see Juster drugging the punch, Greg, he says. I just don't think he has it in him.
Okay, Howard, to me, the vomiting seems incontrovertible, but I'm going to let you play devil's advocate. God knows we don't want Juster's parents dragging us into court either. Try this on for size, then. We've definitely placed Juster at the hop last night. Father Green remembers him arriving. But when I lined the kids up against the wall, guess who wasn't there, Howard? Guess who'd already made his exit?
He bounces the paperweight up and down on his palm and continues theatrically.
But maybe I'm jumping to conclusions. Maybe he just went to bed early. Maybe he came to you and asked for special permission to leave. Did he do that, Howard? You were in charge of the door. Do you remember him asking your special permission to leave?
No,
Howard admits.
So, already we've got him breaking one of the house rules, viz. Leaving without notifying a supervisor. What's to stop him breaking another? Breaking all of them. It's open and shut, Howard. Open and shut.
That the automator has a scapegoat for this debacle is certainly good news for Howard. At the same time, something seems not quite right with this version of events. He struggles to marshal his thoughts against the crashing guilt hangover that tugs him floorwards like a massive psychic drain. And then he remembers.
Greg, Carl Cullen tried to get into the sports hall last night. He knocked on the main door around 9 p.m. He seemed agitated.
Did you let him in?
No, it was after the curfew, so I turned him away.
Then I don't see what he has to do with our situation, Howard, if you didn't let him in.
Well, what if he didn't go home? What if he, you know, if he decided to take revenge? Sneak in and do this?
The automator stares at the floor for a long time. Trudy gazes at him, her pen poised over the page for the moment he recommences speaking.
You say you sent Carl away at what time?
Around 9.
And you left for the geography room at what time?
Maybe 9:30?
So, would he have had time to go home, load up on dope, and come back here in that time?
The automator muses.
Yes, he would. But that's assuming he knew you'd go off on your little excursion and leave the hall unsupervised, which he didn't. Even if he had the Mickey with him from the get-go, would he have hung around outside on the off chance he'd somehow get in? For a half hour? In the rain? The boy's wild, but he's not a masochist. No, this smells to me like an inside job. Someone watching you all night, waiting for his opportunity. He doesn't need much time. A few seconds, that's all it takes. The moment you step outside, he makes his move. Maybe even before you step outside. Either way, he makes the drop, then he's out of there, home free.
But there's no proof it was Juster,
Howard argues, knowing that it is futile.
I mean, it could have been anyone in that room, couldn't it?
Well, sure, it could have been anyone. It could have been mischievous pixies. It could have been the man in the moon. But all the available facts are pointing to this kid, Juster.
But why...
Exactly, Howard. Why? That's what we have to get to the bottom of.
He taps the ballpoint pen against his teeth.
You get any change out of him when you talk to him?
Well...
You did talk to him?
Of course, yes.
And? He give anything away? You get any kind of a fix on where he's coming from?
Howard claws frantically through his memory of his encounter with Skippy, but cannot remember a single thing the boy said. Only Miss McIntyre's hand on his arm, her perfume in his nostrils, her teasing smile.
Well, he largely just seemed like a fairly normal young...
Maybe you should just tell me verbatim what he said to you. Trudy, are you getting this?
Yes, Greg.
Trudy's pen hovers expectantly over the pad. Howard frowns effortfully.
Well, the thing is, it was less of an actual formal conversation and more a sort of a... letting him know the door was open. So that if in the future he had any problems, he could...
If he had...
The automator splutters. He bangs his palm on the desk, as though to jog himself back into motion.
Jesus H. Christ, Howard, we know he has problems. Any kid throws up all over his pals in French class. Yes, he has problems. The whole point is that you were supposed to find out what those problems were, to avoid exactly the kind of scenario we're looking at now.
He sinks heavily into one of the new swivel chairs, pressing the peak of his steepled fingers to his forehead, and issues a sigh that sounds like a sheet of flame, crisping everything in its path.
Well, why don't I go back to him?
Howard says hastily.
I'll talk to him again, and this time I promise I'll find out what's wrong with him.
Too late for that.
The automator mumbles into his hand. Then, spinning in the chair...
Time to send in the big guns. Trudy, make an appointment for Juster with the guidance counselor as soon as he gets back. Father Foley will get to the bottom of this.
He gets up and goes to the window, his back to Howard, his hand on the beaded cord of the Venetian blind.
Have you had a chance to, speak to Juster?
Howard asks huskily.
We did have a very brief chat last night while you were at your janitorial duties.
The answer comes, dripping with false brightness.
Found him upstairs, brushing his teeth. All innocence. Told me he hadn't been feeling well, so he'd gone out for a walk. The door was open, he said, so he thought it was all right. Didn't know anything about anything.
The light grays as the louvres of the blind close, and brightens as they part again.